This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello and welcome again to What I Did Next from A&T Media. I'm Malak Fouad. On the show, we delve into people's life journeys from the point of view of twists and turns, shifts and pivots. We've all had them. Some are more visible than others and make us stop in our tracks and make a course correction. Others only come into focus with hindsight, when we look in the rearview mirror and realize that a particular moment was pivotal in our lives. This is the essence of What I Did Next. I'm joined today by Munaz and Aya Abdelraouf, better known as the sisters behind the global luxury brand Ochtin. Ochtin has taken the luxury fashion retail sector by storm, not just in Egypt and the Middle East, but further afield, including a collaboration with Balmain, which was unveiled during Paris Fashion Week in October last year. Munaz and Aya have always had a love for fashion and accessories, and daydreamed about working in the industry from when they were children, playing dress-up and getting lost in a world of their own. In 2014, they launched Ochtin, turning their fantasy into reality with their savings. They've had celebrities like Beyoncé, Emma Watson, Cardi B, and Gigi Hadid photographed wearing their brand. In 2018, their brother Mohamed Abdelraouf joined the company as CEO, bringing his business acumen to the table. This was followed by a significant investment by Bidayet, a subsidiary of Al Sara Investment Group, which took a stake in the company. Today, Ochtin continues to expand its retail footprint, widening their distribution network to new markets and exploring new product ranges. As always, we start with our icebreaker questions. Who would the girls have around their table for their ideal dinner party? Here's Aya's answer.
I would choose people that I want to dress. So I would definitely choose Rihanna, Dua Lipa, Bella Hadid, and Zendaya and Munez.
I love Zendaya.
Yeah, me too.
I got to know her when she was on the kids' programs because my kids used to watch her shows. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's phenomenal.
And Rihanna, did you see the Super Bowl? She was unbelievable.
Crazy.
And she was, 6 months pregnant?
I really chose all the style icons, like the girls that we really, really want to dress.
Yeah.
Either they're like gorgeous or they're very talented. So maybe have them over for dinner, discuss styling opportunities, get to know them.
And what about you, Munaz?
Honestly, when I thought about this question, I thought that as Munaz, I'd be very interested to just have dinner with just like random people from different eras, just to get a glimpse of what life was like during different
like who, for example?
No, I don't want specific figures, but rather just random people. So
Everyday people.
Like everyday people from different, let's say from the 60s, and then from the 1800s. So just randomly, just to see how life was like.
So for you, the interesting part is the idea of the era.
Exactly.
As opposed to the people. So which era is for you the most impactful?
Impactful? No, I think every era has its own impact. But I'm very interested to know the time where Janis Joplin, the 60s, the 70s. I'm very interested to know what was happening because it's a time where people were very trying to seek the truth, trying to seek answers. They were always so high and so happy. So
and there was a real freedom, right?
Exactly. That time. So I'm just very curious what gave them the sense of freedom when I think actually now we are freer or more free than they were. So it's just interesting for me to know.
It's funny because every generation thinks that they're the ones breaking barriers.
Exactly.
But I think that in that time, the 70s, there really were a lot of barriers being broken.
Exactly.
And really pushing the envelope out. Yeah. What are the other eras that you're interested in?
Definitely during Muhammad Ali Beishan, all this era is very interesting. Ancient, as well. Yeah. Like even their architecture, the way they used to live. I feel like it's interesting because I'm obsessed with watching a lot of historical TV shows. And I'm also obsessed with the Vikings, for instance. So I'd be very interested to go back.
Yeah, yeah. What about culturally? What are you girls consuming now? Are you watching a lot of TV series? Are you listening to podcasts? Are you reading? Are you more, you're very visual people. So is that where you're getting your cultural fix from these days?
It's a bit of both. Yeah, I like to watch TV series and read. I'm reading now a very interesting book. It's called Contagious. By Jonah Berger. He's a marketing professor and he discusses how content can go viral. So it's very interesting. I just started it, so I don't have a lot about to say.
Yeah.
But it's really cool about why some products can go viral and others don't. And it's not necessarily about the product, but it's about the conversation about the product. It's quite interesting.
And the word of mouth around
exactly.
It and the influencers.
How
and
ideas spread,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, there's also an older version of that by Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah,
he wrote that as well, which was a really interesting book. What about you, Munez? What are you reading or listening to at the moment?
I'm in a mood. For the past few months, I've just been reading, honestly. So I'm not really in the mood for anything visual. And I think it's just a phase I'm in right now. I'm going through. So mainly what happens is that Aya is more focused on the visual part. And then she comes up with a concept. She comes to me and she's like, by the way, this, let's say... our childhood is inspiring me at the moment, or this song or that painting. And she's like, she directs me into...
So you'll then go and read about it?
Exactly. So I'm reading more these days. The past year, actually, I've been reading more and less of like looking at things visually.
Give me an example of what you're reading or what you've read in the last year that left an imprint.
I've been reading a lot of very deep books. Just out of curiosity, I've read The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, and I thought it was a very limited book.
Very limited book.
Yeah, so that's why I went on to the next book and then the next book.
Because I know that you're into exploring spirituality.
And
it's
the mind.
Mind.
Yeah, but it's funny because I've been just seeking a lot of answers to a lot of questions, and I've read almost like 40 books the past year. And
wow.
And out of the 40 books, only two really like...
And which were those?
One of them was The Art of Surrender by Hawkins, Dr. Hawkins. And the other one was, it's guided lectures of transformation, self-transformation by Eva Priyakos. So she's not a writer, but she used to give lectures all around the world. And then her followers started writing her lectures. In essay forms. It's very interesting.
Interesting.
Very, very interesting. And honestly, out of all the books I've read, these two actually, they're unlimited in a way. So what's interesting, for example, just last week we were designing brainstorming for SS24.
Already?
Yeah.
SS24?
We're
spring,
late.
Summer 24?
Yeah, and we're actually very late.
And you're late.
And we're very late.
That's unbelievable.
So Aya came last week, like, to the office last week, and she already has the visual part sorted out, which is amazing because she then inspired me to
look into the topic. That's what usually happens, so I can come up with something that an image that inspired me. I would share it with Munez, and then we're like, let's research that, and then from there we get more ideas.
And so that's like the base of the collection, and then it spreads out from
there. Exactly. And sometimes it's the opposite. Okay. So it's really very interesting because it depends on what I'm going through and what she's going through. So sometimes I could be feeling very artsy, and sometimes I could be feeling just like more of reading. So it just yeah, depends.
I know that your childhood was a very, for all of us, very formative, but it's something that you tapped into when you started the brand. Tell me a little bit about growing up. What were some of the pivotal moments for you? And what were your influences at that time?
We loved doing things together. We were always either dressing up together.
Painting together.
Getting in trouble together. So this teamwork synergy we had together was very obvious that we were going to do something together. Like,
it's like your twins.
Exactly.
You have very little age difference, right?
A year and 10 days.
Yeah. So I feel like you're very symbiotic together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the right
yeah.
term.
Yeah.
So even when we were upset with anything, Munez would always be like, hey, just try to imagine yourself in a white room by the beach, like a happy place. So it's always this imaginative part that we had as children that I really feel inspired, and it makes us who we are today. Try to explore and tap into this imaginary world, create something. And I think this is like the core.
And when you say that you were creating things as children, did you create clothes? Did you create scenarios, screenplays?
Anything
creative.
Exactly. Anything and everything. Sandwiches. Come up with a new melted cheese sandwich. Really. My dad loves the kitchen. So we used to go like to the kitchen with him and just make up our own sandwiches at night or our own lunch. So it was always like, even our kitchen was very interesting.
And you're a very close family, all of you together. Yeah.
Even we did like photo shoots. I have, I saw this image, this photograph. I think I was 9. I was 10, and we'd literally dress up and pretend like we're models. Like, of course, these images were
never to be seen by anyone else.
But it was very interesting to see this image. Like, we were pretending to be models. We take our mom's clothes and rework them somehow.
We always lived in this like imaginary world. That's why I think we have a very strong bond, is because people are like, your sisters. And we're not the only sisters on earth that have a bond, right? I think what makes our bond special is that we've always lived in this imaginative world.
Yeah.
Obsessed with cartoons.
Which one?
Everything. Flintstones, Powerpuff Girls, The Jetsons.
The Cowardly Dog.
Courage the Cowardly Dog.
But so they're quite stylistic cartoons.
We love them.
Yeah. They're all about the looks, right?
Exactly.
The Jetsons. Exactly. I mean, these are all very visual.
We would wake up early before school just to watch Cartoon Network. Any visual stimulation just before we go to school.
And tell me, your parents encouraged it, or did they just let you be? How were they about this creativity?
Looking at how my friends are raising their kids nowadays and how they have like rules, I actually try to go back in time and think if mom had given us like hours to watch cartoon, but I don't recall her being so strict about it.
Our mom is very flexible.
I think what you're saying, that people today overparent.
They're overparent.
It's too much.
Too much.
Too
it
much.
Kills the creativity.
Yeah.
Our mom tried to get us into sports.
Yeah.
If we didn't like it, we don't want to swim, we don't want tennis. Yeah. Okay. It was never like a forced parenthood kind of, you have to be this, you have to be that. She let us be, basically.
They call them helicopter moms because they're always hovering over their kids, micromanage them.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact that when phones came out, my mom refused at first to get us phones. I knew that she always like, my mom is always like, Munez, Aya, it's beach time. Go play with your friends. She would always force us to go to the clubs.
Smartphones came way like we were
even when in school, remember
the Nokia.
I were the last of our friends to buy a phone.
It's definitely a problem. I mean, my boys, they don't know a world without it, and it's a major issue. And
it's a Gen Z thing,
and they don't have any sense of how to entertain themselves without being connected to
just sad,
honest. It's awful.
It's very awful. Sad. So yeah, and my dad is also such a hippie at heart, such a hippie and
very free-spirited.
And he was the cook in the family.
And my mom too.
And your mom too.
But my mom was like the cook that
by the recipe.
By the recipe. She needs to follow.
Oh yeah.
My dad would just like
improvise.
Smell different spices, put this on that.
But I guess also the mom is the one that holds it all together.
Yeah.
And so if his meal didn't work out, she had the backup.
Exactly.
She knew it would be fine.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about the origins of Ukhtin. I know that you were both pushing each other along at the beginning. Tell me a little bit about how it all started.
2013, I had just graduated from university. Munez had graduated a year before me. She was working in an advertising agency. She wasn't very happy. We knew back when we were studying that we wanted to do something together, something that had to do with creativity and art. We didn't know exactly what, but we knew that we're going to start something. And it was right when I graduated, I'm like, Munez, you're not happy in your job. Let's start this project we wanted to do together. And let's it happened to fashion, because it's something that we both love and we explored a lot with fashion.
And Aya, you had never worked for a company. So you began your career as a self-employed person. Munaz, you had worked for a company.
Yeah.
So you had an exposure about how office life was and how a little bit how to run a business and so on.
It was a risk, like the first
big risk.
I stayed 1 year researching. I'd get a lot of job interviews and I would reject them all, and my parents were like, hey, what are you doing? Like, trust me, I know what I'm doing.
It takes a lot of discipline to start your own business.
Yeah,
as well.
It did.
It's very hard.
A lot of passion, yeah. A lot of like,
it is very disciplined.
But I mean, it's hard for people who have worked for other people, and you girls didn't really. It's very impressive, and you had the discipline to do it.
It also came from the fact that, okay, it's a risk. I'm not working, I'm not looking for jobs, and I have to make what I'm doing work.
Right.
So, so I told Munez, let's start something together, and then there was a day of brainstorming.
So you left your company and said, yalla, let's do it.
I was a painter before I moved to advertising, and then back then, being just a painter, young female artist was difficult. It wasn't very sustainable, basically. And mm-hmm. with artists, it's when inspiration and
it's a hard field to be in
exactly.
as a career. It's
exactly.
very difficult.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
So then I got myself into advertising. I loved it just because it really is amazing how you can convince someone to buy something even if they don't want to buy it.
And you were on the creative side, not the,
yes,
the creative, ad management
yeah,
side.
Yeah. However, I didn't find myself creatively there because it was a very male-driven industry, all based on sense of humor.
Mm-hmm. Because it's tapping into the local market.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you're not funny or you don't come up with funny ads, you're like, she's the foreign creative. So I really didn't find myself there.
Mm-hmm.
And even like if they asked me to do like things on Photoshop, my stuff would always be too artistic for what clients wanted. And then I didn't just see myself there mm-hmm. because my creativity was very limited. And that's when Aya like realized how unhappy I was, and she's like, listen, this is not meant for you, and let's do something together. At first it was like an interior design idea, and then it moved into fashion because we just realized that we go design our own jewelry, we design our own clothes, so, and people would always stop us and be like, oh, I love this ring, oh, I love this dress. And then I stayed working at that firm for, I think, 6-7 months. And then it came so naturally for me just to leave and just put all my focus in Okhtin. And,
mm-hmm. and from that point until your first collection, how long did that take?
So that was in 2013. We officially launched July 2014. So a year.
A year. Okay. And tell me about that process, that year. What happened in that year? What did you learn? I mean, I'm sure the learning curve was extremely steep.
So we started first with the name, what we wanted to do. And then from there, like, okay, we have to have a framework and then start researching in the right areas. And then we came up with the idea of accessories. And from accessories, let's focus on handbags. And then it was very interesting to us that leather, a lot of the exported leather to the big brands and the big fashion houses comes from Egypt. And then we started going from one tannery to the other. And then from workshops, trying to find the right artisan. And then it took...
So the leather was the base.
Leather was the base.
Yeah.
But before before finding the base, I wanted to find all the supply.
Right.
And from there, I wanted to have my own space. So we found the suppliers. And then from there, I took we took our dad's storage.
Mm-hmm.
And turned it into a workshop.
So very much like Bill Gates, you started in the garage.
Exactly. Literally. And Steve Jobs Steve Jobs was a major inspiration.
Right.
Like I would read a lot about his story. And,
oh, really?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
part of it did you find inspiring?
I loved all his quotes and how he started and the fact that he took over the garage. And then it was very interesting.
And how his sense of failure was
exactly.
essential to his success.
Exactly. And there's this quote where there's, you don't need anything to push you. The vision pulls you.
If you've been listening to What I Did Next since season one, you'll know that this show was also inspired by the Apple founder, specifically his Stanford commencement address, where he talked about his life's pivotal moments. We've linked to that in the show notes. It's definitely worth watching. We'll be right back after this short break.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, Whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch, find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Welcome back. I'm Malak Fouad, and you're listening to What I Did Next. And my guests today are Munez and Ay Abderrauf. In 2014, when the sisters launched their brand, Ukhtin, they knew exactly what they wanted for their company.
The vision was to have a global brand. Okay. I had this fear of creating a brand that just lasts for a year or two, and then with bad quality, and then bye-bye.
Right.
I really had this fear. Mm-hmm. So we're like, no, we're not going to go that direction at all.
So you never thought of yourself at the beginning as an Egyptian brand?
No, Egyptian brand that made it internationally. Mm-hmm. Like, backs, we really
but
wanted...
We didn't really limit it to Egypt. I think it was like an Arab thing. It's like Egyptian, Arab, Middle Eastern. It was.
But your first collections with the use of metal... felt very Egyptian.
Yeah, because we wanted to stay to our core and our aesthetic.
Yeah.
But that's the point. We wanted, French brands, Italian brands. And we saw how everyone here and in the Arab world are so obsessed with the Western fashion.
Yeah.
And we really wanted to change that. Because
mm-hmm.
we're the spenders of luxury, right?
Yeah.
Why don't spend from designers from the region that speaks your language and comes from almost the same culture?
You know, Aya, what I find really interesting is that in the last 5 years, I think it started before the pandemic, more and more... people who work in your industry, in the creative arts in the Middle East, are putting their own nationality, their own heritage to the forefront now. Whereas before, exactly as you said, everyone looked to the West for inspiration. That's not happening anymore. People are buying local. People are wearing their national dress with pride.
Exactly.
And with love.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as beautiful, if not more, than what you see abroad in the West.
Exactly.
And that's, I think, what you're tapping into. And your timing, I think, is quite interesting for that.
Exactly. We came from that background. We really wanted to push this nationalistic idea of don't shy away from your culture.
Yeah.
Don't try to be someone you're not. And that was our main rooted inspiration from Khan al-Khalili, from old Cairo. We used to go there a lot. The energy there is incredible.
Mm,
like Munez and I, we would walk through the alleys and like, imagine this place, but during the time period it was built.
Yeah.
It almost feels like it's still the same.
It does feel like it's still
exactly.
the same. It has the same roh.
Roh, exactly.
Yeah, it does.
So the inspiration came from there, and then we started the workshop. And from the
And I know you had some difficulty at the beginning finding the right craftsmen to work with.
Mm.
This is a very challenging part of any creative industry in the region. How did you overcome that?
It was very challenging because when you had set up the space, you were looking for the artisans, the skilled artisans. And it was very hard to headhunt from any place. It's not quite common. I remember calling Munez, crying, I can't find anyone. I don't know what to do. We tell our mom and our dad. My mom was always like, "Lis al maitosh." And it literally came through someone. I asked.
I think it was fate, actually, because we really did. So if I want to give real advice to someone, is that it's not going to come to you, definitely. So that's rule number one. Rule number two is that if it doesn't come the first time, you try the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth. And until you've tried everything, and when you just surrender to it, it says when the universe sends you a little gift. And this is exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's like...
Mm-hmm.
We asked around, we hired someone who was wrong, who wasted the first money we had saved. It was meant to go on this journey to try. You appreciate it more when you actually find someone.
Of course.
Yeah?
So you made changes in your manufacturing process. You got a better team together. Tell us a little bit after that. I know your brother came on board.
Yeah. So we started in this workshop for a couple of years. It was great because it was more hands-on. Munez and I would spend hours with the artisans, learning the craft, and at times doing the bag with the artisan. And then it came
and
to
sorry,
a point.
And sorry, normally you wouldn't be using your hands yourselves. You'd be the designers
yes.
and then people would implement.
Of course, yes,
okay.
definitely. But the very beginning phase, we were part of the process. And then with time and when there was more demand and we had won this competition, we started exporting. It was a time to move from the workshop to a bigger factory.
Tell me about the competition.
So we were part of, it was a time when Ez and I, we wanted the regional and like regional press or regional wholesalers to acknowledge our brand. And we knew the only way to do that is to enter competitions where we can get a lot of like press
and visibility.
Yeah. Exactly. So it made sense to start in the Middle East and with Arab designers. And to our luck, it was Vogue Arabia. So with the launch, they did this competition for designers. So it's called Fashion Prize. There is the ready-to-wear and there's accessories.
Right.
And we won the accessories. And it was great because the judges were incredible. And they were very respected in the fashion industry from the Middle East and international.
And what did you submit?
We submitted our, I think it was like our first, second season. I think it was 20.
But mind you, yeah, the comparison to our competitors, the quality was really bad. And it was like, oh my God. And we were laughing about it.
You're comparing it to now. But yeah. Back then?
But back then, it was the best we could have provided for a workshop, right?
And then with, I guess the judges saw the potential, right?
The judges told us something that A and I just really held on to. They're like, you girls have identity. And it's so, the quality is so easy to fix, but the identity is so hard to obtain or to have.
I think that's really true. And you girls knew exactly who you were from day one.
Exactly.
That's priceless. You can't buy that. You can't fix it.
Thank you. So I remember one of the judges was like, the backpack you created a year ago is the same. You've created another backpack, but a summer version of it. But it's the same design. So I can still tell these two items are Ukhtin.
Yeah. And that's exactly what you're looking for. Yeah. It needs to be recognizable.
And from that prize, we were able to stock in Browns, Selfridges in Qatar or in Kuwait, in a boutique in LA. So it was really like the life-changing moment.
And then you started
moment.
Getting celebrities wearing your items, exactly. Right? At the same time. Who did you have at the beginning?
Beyonce.
Beyonce. That's really something.
We got Beyonce from the store in LA.
So it was that the backpack?
It was a belt bag.
Oh, the belt bag. Okay.
So really, it was a milestone for us. And then from there, we had to change our manufacturing process completely. And then we started traveling and looking for production outside to help with keeping up with the demand.
And where did you go for that?
We went to Spain for our brass.
Yeah.
Where else? And then we went to Italy. And then our brother joined.
And he's your CEO, right?
He's our CEO.
And partner.
And partner.
Private equity background, investment banking. So it was perfect for us.
Great. So you can take your eye off the ball to a certain extent of the whole business stuff as well, exactly. Which is nicer for you.
Missing piece of the puzzle.
Exactly.
And he really transformed the business, growing the company, having a structure, hiring the right talent. It was really like life-changing. Mm-hmm. And
you attracted the attention a little bit later, I think, of Rashid Mohammed Rashid with Bidayat. Did that happen more or less as soon as your brother came on board, or was that a little bit later?
It was right around the time.
Around the same time.
Yes.
And how did that interest from him, I'm sure it was a very exciting time for you girls to have someone like him have an interest in you. I mean, he's a very dynamic businessman, very respected. What did that mean for you, and how did the business change when he came in with an investment?
It was very, very exciting for us because, you know, we wanted this support and this regional support that we can't really get or access ourselves. And it was very exciting. And honestly, we couldn't have done it without Mohammed. It's a lengthy process.
And it's a long-term process.
The long-term process and a lengthy process. And you need to have everything sorted out. And we couldn't have done it without Mohammed.
So presumably his firm will have identified your weaknesses and then come in to try and fill those gaps,
with
right?
resources, yes.
Yeah.
With like international resources that can help in, for example, merchandising, can help with production. And we really wanted for the past, so we've been doing that for the past year and a half, focusing on our structure, focusing on the product. It's the first thing we wanted to focus on is the product because it's the heart of the company.
Yeah.
So we really wanted to have like the best product out there in terms of the quality, design, identity. And then from there, present it and work on the marketing part after completing and perfecting the product.
When we come back, we'll talk about the sisters' collaboration with Balmain and their upcoming plans. That's right after this break.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome back. I'm Malak Fouad and you're listening to What I Did Next. And my guests today are Munez and A. Abdelraouf, the power duo behind the luxury brand Ochtin.
Tell me about Balmain. So in October, I believe, he did his spring-summer 2023 show.
Yeah.
And you girls had designed the most gorgeous corset made of alabaster, I believe.
Resin.
Yeah. But inspired, it looked like alabaster, right?
Yeah.
I went and looked up the runway show. It was breathtaking.
Thank you.
It was really breathtaking. I mean, she was so gorgeous.
Yes, she was. Yeah.
Tell me, I know that it was a labor of love and a lot of trial and error. What did that partnership mean to you? And how has it seen you progress since then?
It was a dream. I think Munez manifested this because
so it worked.
But really, like before even the idea of collaborating together, Munez, we were having dinner and Munez was like, you know what? I have a feeling that we're going to collaborate with a big name, Balmain.
And you said the name.
She said the name. I'm like, even Mohammed and I were like, Munez, come on.
La la la.
She's like, trust me, I have a feeling. And then honestly, a couple of months later.
No, three weeks later.
It was like a month.
Three weeks later.
Yeah, a month or two.
Yeah. I got a phone call.
We got a phone call that they're looking for Egyptian designers to collaborate with. And they're interested in Ochtin. And that was like, oh my God, MOG moment with Munez.
Totally.
You manifested it.
Totally. And you had never created a piece of clothing.
Exactly.
Before. And it wasn't really clothing because it was a hard
case. It
was case,
a sculpture.
A sculpture, yeah.
Exactly. We thought of a handbag. But then when the brief came and it was a bustier or a corset, we're like, okay, how are we going to do that?
Even think that we get a brass bustier or something that is like close to, or a leather one even.
Yeah.
But no, they gave us like a brief.
Yeah.
That was almost impossible, like alabaster. I'm like, there's
eroded alabaster in the desert.
It was gorgeous.
That was the brief.
The concept is amazing.
It's beautiful.
But first of all, you cannot actually create a corset out of alabaster because of the weight and
of course.
So I think this was the most challenging part because we're like, okay, what if we do white leather and then get an artist to paint over it and make it look like alabaster? And like, no,
it won't look right.
What if? No, it was crazy. And then we almost gave up because it was very difficult. And we remembered that when we were at the factory a few months earlier in Italy, the head of the factory had showed us like a printed frog, literally, and it was colored blue. So I sent him, I'm like, ciao, Luca, I remember this frog we saw. Can you tell me what the material is? He's like, it's resin. I'm like, okay, what if I want to print it and not color it? Surprise. And then I asked him, can I print the alabaster print on the white resin? He's like, yes, of course, let's try. So we printed out the bustier. And to our luck, the bustier's natural color looked like alabaster.
Oh, it had that translucent look, Shreya?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you had like veins, like brownish veins. And we're like, oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah.
We did this one piece virtually. So it was through Zoom, and then our product developer had to go. She flew from Paris to Italy, stayed there for like 2-3 days just to finalize the final look. And then we flew to Paris just to meet Olivier to show him and present the
product. Yeah.
And that was in May last year. We went to Paris. We were waiting for our product developer to come from
with the piece.
And she literally took the piece with her on the plane, not in her luggage, just so she can take care of it. As soon as she arrived the day of the meeting. She came to our hotel room. It was, I think, 11 a.m. And the meeting was at 3. She came, she was like unpacking the box. And to our surprise, the bustier was literally
broken in half.
Wow. So just literally the bag was put on the floor and it broke.
It's
something like that.
It's very fragile.
It's very fragile.
I think it's and the thin. Pressure of the...
And very thin.
And thin.
And probably the pressure of the plane. God knows what happened. When she saw the bustier in half, she started crying.
Wow.
And I started laughing.
We started laughing.
Like, really?
Imagine, like, this is the most important
and meeting of your life.
I couldn't sleep the day before because I'm meeting Olivier. We're showing him, we're presenting something that we didn't see in real life. We only saw pictures. So it was very stressful.
And then what happened?
We're like, okay, what are we going
to
do?
So you took it to the meeting?
No. Munez was like, let's go to a convenience store. Let's find super glue. Like, super glue, how can we do that?
And we did.
She's like, trust me, we're going to make it happen. We went, the super glue.
I was like, oh my God, we've been busting our asses for the past 6 months. No, you know what, universe? It's not going to break now.
Yes, yes,
we
yes.
literally glued it together.
And it didn't show? He didn't notice?
No.
Wow. But does he know now?
It was a fake.
Is he going to be hearing this?
I don't know.
But his assistant knew. So the assistant, listen, this is just a prototype. We just want to show you. We're going to be recreating it all again.
So you were able to put it on a model that day?
If you see the video, Munez and I were like this. We don't know what to expect. I'm sweating. I'm telling Munez, what if it falls or breaks when she's wearing it in front of him? That's going to be the worst moment of my life.
That's amazing.
But thank
it's
God.
A great story, by the way.
Thank God. Yeah. It was held in one piece. Yeah. He was walking.
He loved it.
And how has that experience helped you as a company? Did anything come further than just the one show? Are there more talks for other things to work with him or other designers?
We got great press. So that was very interesting for us. We got press from Mexico, Japan, from Greece. So it was interesting that other countries were talking about it, some sort of hype or buzz. And it did show interest in other brands wanting to collaborate. So it could potentially lead
to
another...
So you're in talks with a few other people?
Yes.
Yeah. Which we're not going to announce yet.
Because it's still like in the very beginning. Yeah. So if I think this could be an open door for us to potentially collaborate with other brands and present new things, not just handbags.
Sure. And tell me about, let's talk about that actually. So what are the other categories you're looking to develop?
So Octane is an accessory brand for the time being. We never really wanted to have like a definitive brand category. So we were always open to exploring our identity because like we said, it's very strong. So you can see an Octane blazer. You can see an Octane shoe, for example. As you know, we have the handbags, and from handbags we went to belts and then small leather goods and then eyewear. So it's very in this category.
I was recently at the GEM, the Grand Egyptian Museum, and I came across your shop. And you are positioned with all the luxury brands that Egypt has to offer. All the luxury brands are visible at the museum. What does that mean to you, being in that space, being in that, you know, in that museum? The museum is stunning.
Stunning, yeah.
And it's opening, I think, at the end of the year. The footfall there will be astronomical. How do you see this changing or taking further the name?
We're very excited to be part of something very historic for Egypt. And we felt like the brand is a really strong representation of Egypt. So we really didn't want to miss out.
Mm-hmm.
We got a very good location. It's right in front of the statue. So we were lucky.
It's beautiful.
We love that. Even if it's a very small, tiny store, we love the location. Yeah. We felt we could do a lot with it. Our bags are tiny. They're small, so it can really fit with the space. Our designer had an incredible concept behind it. It was if you've noticed, there are a lot of linear lines on the walls, and there is this stone in the middle. The designer really wanted to have some sort of heritage, a lot of rooted ancient civilization heritage. So the stone was from Aswan. All the lines were like the journey and the path leading to the Nile River.
Amazing.
So it's very interesting. And then we had our motif, which is like the palmate motif, lasered on like brass panels on the wall. Very similar to what they used to do with the hieroglyphics.
And are you making a collection especially for the shop?
Yes.
You are.
So we chose like creating and merchandising the store. We had the very specific bags. So it's mainly evening bags. Very bejeweled bags. We're introducing a very interesting category in the store next month, limited only for the store, and definitely like pharaonic influences.
Yeah,
we have
a
felucca handbag, and we're also going to showcase the Balma bustier there.
Oh, really?
Because it is inspired by ancient Egypt.
Absolutely. No, and it's fitting that it would be there.
Our
work of art now.
Yeah. Our production team is in Italy, and they're going to get it with them.
Very nice. And what's next for you girls? What are your, where is your focus now? What are you working on? What's taking up your time these days?
Regional expansion.
Mm.
So we're very excited to be announcing a shop-in-shop in Qatar. We also have another shop-in-shop at Riyadh Level Shoes District. That's going to be for like 4 months.
Only for 4 months?
Yeah. So the Level one, the Riyadh, is only for 4 months.
So it's like a pop-up.
It's a pop-up.
Oh, okay.
But they're giving us our own space.
Yes.
So it has more of identity.
Right.
It's not like having the bags in a shelf. So that's what I really like about it, is because with Octane,
it needs its own space to just have the look and feel of the brand.
Yeah, no, and I think you want to protect your image. You want to make sure that you're positioned in the correct way.
Exactly, and we have a lot of like our display tools. We're very detail oriented. Even the display tool has the identity of Ochtane. So the way you present the bag is everything. It's not just the product.
Of course.
So we have that coming up, and hopefully Dubai end of this year. So we have this regional pop-up expansion strategy this year. More popping in the region and bringing back wholesale.
The focus is more regional as opposed to further afield for now.
I mean, like further afield, we're back to wholesale now. We're testing it this month, actually, for Paris Fashion Week. And let's see.
Exciting. Girls, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. It's such a pleasure.
I'm so glad you're on the show.
I enjoyed it so much.
Thank you for joining me today. And if you've enjoyed this episode, leave us a review in your favorite podcast app. On our bonus episode for members, which comes out next week, I talk to Munez and Aya about flexing their creative muscle and how COVID-19 impacted their work. You can get this episode by signing up on our website and also on Apple Podcasts. What I Did Next is brought to you from A&T Media. This episode was hosted by me, Malak Fouad, and is produced by me and Chirag Desai. You can follow us for more on our website, Instagram, Twitter, and on LinkedIn. Just search for What I Did Next. We'll be back again with a new guest in 2 weeks' time. See you then.